On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys. It's happening. Oh, my God, guys. Oh, my God. I wish you all were here.
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No.
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
Aren't you that guy everybody hates?
No, man, no.
This is Tall Can Audio. Follow along on Twitter at Tall Can Audio or at Facebook.com/Tall Can Audio.
Just do it!
How's it going, everybody? Welcome into the Tall Can Audio podcast. We are, of course, on Twitter and Instagram at Tall Can Audio, Facebook.com/Tall Can Audio. Make sure you're subscribed wherever you're listening to this. Really happy to be welcoming back to the show for the first time in quite a while, the voice of the Red Blacks, AJ Jakubek. How are you doing?
I'm good, Matt. Tough day for sure, but good to be with you as always.
I think the last time we were going to have you on was just after the Grey Cup. We were going to kind of look back at how the season went, and things kind of went off the rails a little bit for you. How are you feeling these days?
Yeah, feeling pretty good. Basically, week after Grey Cup, for those that don't know, I ended up going to hospital with acute pancreatitis. Basically, I had gallstones that were blocking my bile duct and pancreas, and it was a pretty serious situation. I ended up in hospital for 66 days total, and 8 of those days in intensive care. So, yeah, scary situation, but got through it. It was a long 6.5 months because recovery continued at home after that. I was fortunate that it happened before COVID, at least the first part of it. I spent all my time in hospital before COVID. So, fortunate to have a ton of support from my parents coming in from Edmonton and other family. My sister came in from Calgary, and just so many different people visiting me in hospital, that certainly helped. And once COVID started and I was recovering at home, I was fortunate just to have friends logistically help me, take me to doctor's appointments, bring me groceries and that sort of thing. So yeah, it was a tough 6.5 months for sure, but feeling pretty good right now, feeling healthy. I still have to get some stents out. I still have to get my gallbladder out, going forward. My pancreas is never going to recover to the same degree that it was. So because of that, I'll be a higher risk of diabetes going forward. So I'll have to watch my diet and that sort of thing. But beyond that, no complaints. Feel pretty good right now, and great to be back working again, and great, just to be feeling healthy again.
The day that you... I want to ask you about the CFL. I definitely want to get to that. But before we do, your first day back on the air at TSN 1200, we also happen to have Chris Hoffley on our show, who's someone I'm sure you know quite well. And yeah. For people who missed that one, Chris Hoffley is the communications director over at the Ottawa Sports and Entertainment Group. And we talked a little bit about your kind of first shift back and how great it was to hear you back on the air. I'm curious, because you did have, I think it was the second break of the show, you kind of told the story, you handed out some thank yous, this and that. It was quite a long break. I don't know how many commercials may have gotten backed up or whatever, but it was really cool to hear. I wonder, as you're kind of getting healthy again and you can kind of start to see that in your future again, getting back to work, getting back on the air, how much of that is sort of pre-planned, I'd really like to say this, I'd really like to thank these people, and how much of it is just sort of off the chest in the moment?
A little bit of both. I mean, most of it was written out for sure, especially the people that I wanted to thank. There was no doubt that was part of it. I just kind of had a bunch of notes and kind of spoke from the heart. That's basically how I did it. So Yeah, it was an emotional day for sure, being back. And I know that segment, I basically spoke for an hour straight. So I some people would say, well, I'm not surprised given how I tend to ramble at times. But yeah, that was, I don't think I've ever spoken for that long.
It was great radio. It was compelling. So,
yeah, it was good though. It was a pretty emotional day. It was just great to be back at work. And, you know, I can tell you, just this past Saturday, getting to broadcast live sports again was pretty emotional and a fantastic day for me as well, because I love what I do. I'm very passionate about what I do, and I love hosting talk shows. But my true passion in the business is being able to broadcast live sports and to be able to call a game again for the first time since December 1st, the day before I was admitted into hospital for pancreatitis. It was 67s in North Bay on that December 1st, 2019 day. And you know, Saturday I got to call the first ever game in Atletico Ottawa history on TSN 1200. And that was a pretty awesome experience, different experience, right? I mean, I'm, you know, the only broadcaster here. Anyone else broadcasting the games on television is calling games off a monitor.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, even like in the National Hockey League, I mean, Mike Emmerich and Kenny Albert and, you know, pretty much every radio team, even the Edmonton and Toronto radio teams in round one in the qualifying, had to call games off the monitor from their studios. So yeah. They weren't allowed to call games in the building. I think from an Edmonton and Toronto perspective, it was one of those things, look, we're not flying 22 teams broadcasters into the bubble. We, you know, Jack Armstrong and Matt Devlin are doing the same for their bubble situation.
And Dan Shulman and Buck Martinez right down with the Jays. Dan's posted a couple of pictures of what their setup looks like over at Sportsnet with the huge, you know, one big screen and then a bunch of smaller screens to be able to see the bullpens, to be able to see other smaller things. So it's a different world. I had no idea you were the only one out there.
And that's why I'm like, I know Chris Cuthbert and Pierre Maguire and Gord Miller have been able to call games from the actual arena.
Yeah.
But for the most part, everyone's been calling games off a monitor. And then, you know, that doesn't even talk about the ones that haven't even had a chance recently to call any games, right? Because of the pandemic. So between my health situation and just the pandemic, to be here in Charlottetown, I'm in Charlottetown PEI right now for the Island Games, the Canadian Premier League's event this year, and it's their second season and the first year for Atletico Ottawa. And just to be here and to be able to call that game Saturday for a lot of different reasons, very emotional for me. And I feel just super fortunate, again, to have my health, and you know, back to you know, not necessarily to where it was at 100%. Again, my pancreas will never recover to 100% strength. But again, I feel great. I feel pretty much 100%. And so to have that and to be able to call games again, really awesome for me. So I'm feeling pretty good about life and pretty fortunate about where I'm at right now.
What can you tell us about, just briefly, on the Island Games? What is it? Is it a set, like a tournament or a round robin? What's your setup like in the bubble as the only broadcaster there? How are they handling things out? Because the Maritimes have done quite well handling the virus. I'm surprised they were willing to let almost anybody in, really.
Yeah, so it's an eight-team tournament. There were seven teams last year, and there's eight with the addition of Atletico Ottawa. Atletico Ottawa, owned by Atletico Madrid, one of the top football clubs in the world, and Jeff Hunt's a part of the setup as well as the president, so and a strategic partner. So from that perspective, you know, when Ottawa Fury, you know, there's 6 years of Ottawa Fury FC soccer, and they started in the North American Soccer League. Then they went to the USL, and in the USL, they were the only Canadian team, and unfortunately, weren't able to get sanctioning. And there was a lot of political nonsense that led to that decision. But nonetheless, you know, kind of water under the bridge now. It was unfortunate how it ended, and you kind of worried, okay, what's the deal regarding professional soccer in the future of pro soccer in Ottawa? To have Atletico Madrid and Jeff Hunt step up in the matter they did, fantastic for sports fans and soccer fans in Ottawa for sure. And so, yeah, they're part of this eight-team event. in Charlottetown. They're all going to play each other once. Ottawa started with a 2-2 draw against York 9. And they play Wednesday against Valor, which is a team from Winnipeg. All the games are on TSN 1200, which is fantastic. And yeah, just, top four teams of the eight are advancing to the next phase. Top two, they'll all play each other once again. And then the top two will play in a final. So you could play 7 games. You could play 10 games. And if you make it all the way to the final, you could play 11 games. In terms of logistics and how it's working for me, everyone needed 2 negative tests and to isolate for 2 weeks before coming to PEI. The only way you could get onto the island as part of this bubble was on one of those 2 WestJet charters. One did the milk run through the West, Victoria, Calgary, Edmonton, Winnipeg. The other one did basically Toronto, because you've got the 2 teams, Toronto and Hamilton, York and Hamilton, sorry. Mm-hmm. Halifax actually took a sequestered bus here, but our charter was league staff, league officials, some media people. The media is all basically people that are behind the scenes technically running the television broadcast. So I'm the only actual broadcaster here. There's another reporter here from the Canadian Premier League in Oliver Platt. But I'm kind of on an island on the island, I guess, so to speak, in the sense that no one else is truly covering this event from the outside. So it's an honor to be here. 2 negative tests to get onto the charter. We took a test as soon as we got here, another one within 72 hours. Basically everyone's had 4 negative COVID tests here in less than 2 weeks. Test again tomorrow. It'll be weekly from now on. The bubble is secure. PEI, there's no active cases. So from that perspective, I feel like, I'm in one of the safest environments around. The rules are strict. We're in the hotel. We're allowed to go to the stadium and back, and that's about it. So, and even within the bubble itself, it's not open season. There's groups within the bubble. So, for example, I'm not in the Atletico bubble. I'm in the media/league bubble. There's 8 different team bubbles, and then there's a league/media bubble, and then there's also the officials bubble. And so we all eat together. We have a games room together. I'm not allowed in the Atletico bubble, so right, to speak. Yeah. So, which is challenging in some ways. I can do interviews with them 6 feet apart at the stadium or in a hallway here, but I can't just go into their team room to mingle with them and that sort of thing. I can't take their team bus to go to the stadium and back. So yeah, it's now that I've been here, we got here Saturday, so this would be a day 10. The positives far outweigh the negatives. The Canadian Premier League has done a really good job of setting this up, and they've been fantastic to work with from my perspective. So really impressed with how this has been run from their end. The food has been disappointing in here. It's getting better. That's a big issue, right?
Of course.
For me, I was kind of like, okay, how am I going to be able to do my job? The answer is yes. Right.
Right.
So that was most important. I need to be able to, technically and just everything, do my job, get interviews, all that sort of thing. So that's fine. Gym time, not kind of where I'd like it to be, but we've got a window from 6:30 in the morning to 7:45. So it is what it is. We've got a bike in our room. So I've used the bike more than I've been to the actual gym.
Right.
Not ideal. I don't understand it to be honest. If you're asking me my honest opinion, I don't understand why the NHL bubble is different, where they can, Gord Miller can work out in the same room that an NHL official is, socially distanced, clean it before, clean it after. Everyone in the bubble is negative, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I from that perspective, it doesn't make me nervous if I'm interacting with somebody else. But I guess they're trying to, I don't know. It's not like a COVID wind is going to all of a sudden come through the hotel.
This would be a much more terrifying disease if that was the case.
Exactly. So, I mean, I hope PEI relaxes some of those protocols. Look, I get it. It's not good. In the end, now, you know, for any PEI government person that might be listening, in the end, like, we have zero chance, right? Two negative tests and two before that. So it's four negative tests for anyone in here, and it'll be five as of tomorrow, I would guess.
Yeah.
No one in here is going to infect anyone from the outside.
Right.
That's the reality. No one in here, we're not going to infect each other. No one has it. So from that perspective, I get the bubble. I get no mingling. And the reason I get it in particular is because you want to keep the bubble safe.
Yes.
And obviously it's about keeping people from PEI safe, and that's great. But I guarantee you the chances of someone in here infecting the general public and PEI, 0% right now. The chances of that happening the other way, it's not very high given the fact that there's no cases, but right, there's an Atlantic bubble. There's different things that can happen. So that number is higher than the number the other way around. So
right,
from that perspective, it makes sense for me to have strict protocols, that there isn't mingling, that there is a bubble. You know, I get that, but our protocols within this place, I think they're a little too strict for my liking. But in the end, it's like I said, I feel very fortunate to be here. If the food, the catering was a little bit better, but that, again, CPL has kind of worked out those kind of issues from my end. The lunches and dinners have been decent enough. You know, got a little bit of stipend beyond that, so I can order delivery. And, you know, because my schedule isn't always on everybody else's schedule,
right, yeah.
So if I want to order lobster roll or seafood chowder, I can do that. But when you talk to people here, and especially the media bubble, a lot of those people in the media bubble are camera people or switchers or audio people,
sure,
that work live broadcasts, and a lot of these people haven't worked. So like, there's the odd grumbling and complaining, but in the end, if you ask everybody how they're doing, we're all thrilled to be here. And my experience so far has been really good. There's some challenges for sure. But beyond that, I'm just thrilled to be here because the alternative would be I'm not calling games.
Right.
So for me, it's I can live with some bad quiche at breakfast. I hope it gets better. You know, they got us some cereal and some milk and some more fruit today. And that's the thing. I'm not asking for lobster eggs Benedict right, or, French toast a la whatever.
Yeah.
Just looking for a little bit of cereal and fruit in the morning, and don't serve us some bad quiche. So,
right.
Beyond that, pretty cool experience. And, ask me in a few weeks how it's going to be. Mm-hmm. But so far, so good. Just great to be in this bubble.
I'll tell you, a friend of mine who occasionally co-hosts this show, her name's Amy. She's a Canadian Paralympian, and she's from PEI. So the beginning of March, her mom came into Ottawa here from the island because Amy had to travel for a couple of tournaments, so she was going to watch the kids so that Amy's husband could keep working and just stay for 2 or 3 weeks. When Amy gets back from her last trip, the virus is blowing up. One of them has symptoms in the house, so they all have to quarantine for 2 weeks. Turns out none of them had it, but they're quarantined for 2 weeks. And by the time those 2 weeks are up, the country's locked. She's terrified to fly. The trains are closed. Her husband back on the island can't come get her because the bridge is closed. And if he does, he has to quarantine for 2 weeks when he gets back to the island, which he can't afford to do because he's off. She ended up being here for almost 3.5 months, and
wow.
I've met her. She's a delightful woman, but you can imagine having your mother-in-law in your home for 3 months when you were expecting 2 weeks. It's maybe not quite what anyone had in mind, and she finally one day there in July was just like, I have to go home, and champed up and flew, but the island was remarkably, strict on everything, even for their own citizens. If you're not back, you're not getting in, right? Like, that was sort of their deal, and I guess hard to argue with success. Like they've done well, but yeah, it was quite a thing to see. She was stuck here for several months at a time. So
yeah, and again, I understand that part of it. I understand the Atlantic bubble. I'd never criticize even something along those lines, right? It's open to everyone in Atlantic Canada. I understand, especially for the first couple of weeks here, right? That the rule is you're supposed to quarantine. If you're a member of the general public,
right,
you're supposed to quarantine for 2 weeks upon arrival here, and then you can travel throughout the province after that. So my question would be, all right, if we've technically quarantined within our bubble for 2 weeks,
right?
Again, and the question is, and I'm not saying I should be able to go to Cows and get an ice cream, which I'd love to be able to do. I've driven past it, drive past it every day when I go to the stadium.
That's right.
One of those things that's like, well, I can't get that through delivery. Otherwise, it'll be melted by the time it comes to me. I guess I could order a milkshake. Maybe I'll think about doing that.
Yeah.
But, but anyways, so on that part of it, I understand 100%. And again, mainly because of the safety of the people in the bubble here, right? I mean, from my perspective, it's about, and we're going to talk about the CFL.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, there's a lot at stake, and just to be able to hold an event like this in these uncertain times is a credit to everyone involved that is putting this event on.
Of course.
You don't want to compromise that, right? So I again, that's the importance of having the bubble, but just a couple of the rules within the bubble, I just think, why can I not go to the gym at 3:30 in the afternoon?
Sure, yeah.
And be socially distanced away from somebody when I, again, it is what it is. It's
yeah,
it's,
no,
it, you know, in the end, it's first world problems.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like, hey, you know what, when I was sick in hospital for 66 days, I've earned the right to complain about first world problems when I want.
Sure.
That's kind of how I feel about the whole situation. If I was told that you can't complain about that, it's kind of like, well, no, that's part of the reason why I went through what I went through, so I can complain about that. And I understand it's still a first world problem, but I think it's important. You look at Tuukka Rask, right? And I don't know the situation there.
Yeah.
I just hope he's okay. Right.
Of course.
It's not easy. It's difficult. And the longer you go, the more difficult it is. I'd love to be able to just, so many people have asked me, how's PEI? I'm like, well, I'm sure it's great, but I'd love to be able to just walk along the water. You can't do that. Right. And that's fine. I knew what I was signing up for before, but that takes its toll when you don't have, you know, the freedom when you don't have, it's kind of like a four-star prison is basically how it's great there, but you're locked, you're in lockdown, right? That's the reality. I've got a great room. I'm at the Delta. They've resolved some of the league has resolved some of the food concerns that I might have had, and so that's all great. And you know, again, I knew what I was getting into. I brought books. There's plenty of hockey and basketball and soccer to be watched right now on television with everything that's going on. There's, just getting to know the different teams here and Atletico Ottawa, that's a real positive for me. So there's a lot to be done. I haven't even played any computer games yet. I've read 33 pages of a book. And 29 of those I read on the plane. I read 4 in my room, and I brought 8 books. So, and we're on day 10. It's not looking like I'm going to get through 8 chapters, let alone 8 books. So it's good. Life is good, but you know, all you have to do is look at some of the other sports, and hey, it's not easy being in those types of confines. You're not used to that. It's just not a normal thing for you to be, to not have that type of freedom, to not just be able to walk outside on a sunny day and just walk down the street and go for a walk. Right. So there's pros and cons to everything. And like I said, knew what I signed up for. And I would say the experience has been very positive from my perspective so far, but very positive with some obvious challenges in there as well, because when you talk about food and you talk about exercise, and especially you know, going through what I went through, that's you're talking about health issues, yep. right? So yeah. I'm very cognizant of wanting to, you know, build it. I feel good, but I want to keep feeling good. Right. So I want to eat well. And I want to be able to exercise. I want to get stronger. So far, most of my issues have been alleviated, but some of those, you know, I'm hoping that, again, the PAI government steps up a little bit more, you know, in a week or so, just in terms of our rules within this bubble environment. That's all that I ask, and I think a few others would ask as well.
Well, longtime listeners to this show will know that I'm anything but a soccer guy, and on Saturday, when I heard you were going to have the call, I put it on as I was puttering away around the house, cleaning up or whatever, just to hear your call. And you sounded right on your game with some big goal calls there and stuff. It was pretty cool to hear you back. The last thing I want to get to before we hit the CFL is you're back on the air, and you're hosting In the Box on TSN 1200 still from your room there, or from your four-star prison out on Spud Island. And I know a lot of radio teams, and even maybe before you left, there were times where, you know, you weren't both in studio. I am curious about what you have found the challenges to be, you know, whether it's been with Dean Brown here today, or whether, you know, Steve Lloyd, when you've been on with him, what it's like trying to do a show like yours every day with callers and things like that when you're not in the same room and you can't kind of work off the cues that the other person is giving you, that they're wrapping up or that they need a second for you to keep going or whatever. You know, Rob and I are dealing with something similar, but it's a much smaller scale, obviously, right? Where we normally can look right across the table at each other, and it is what it is. I'm curious what that side of the job has been like in this kind of new environment.
Yeah, it's a little challenging. I wouldn't say it's super challenging. There are instances where you're just naturally going to talk over one another, and there are instances where there's going to be more of a natural pause than there otherwise would. I know we really try to communicate over text, especially when we have an interview guest, try and alternate questions. And then, you know, beyond that, say, hey, I'm out of questions. It's all you, or,
right.
you know, I'd like to follow up what I just asked, so that, you know, you'd like to kind of keep questions in the same vicinity to, you know, if you're talking to, you know, Mark Gowdy, for example, today, mm-hmm. He was on TSN 1200 with Ian Mendez and Lever Sage. So I'm just throwing this top of my head. So let's say Mark Gowdy's on, and, I just asked a Red Blacks question, and I've got another Red Blacks question, but let's say my co-host is Ian, and he wants to move on to the right. 67s. Well, I'll say, hang on, I've got one more Red Blacks question here. And then I'll let you go to the 67s, right?
Yeah.
So that you're kind of, rather than saying,
bouncing all over,
you know,
the
bouncing at 67s and then, oh, I have one more Red Blacks question, by the way.
Right.
You know, and look, sometimes it's not going to be, nothing's ever going to be perfect from that scenario, but it's a little more challenging. You can't use, rather than using hand gestures, which is what we use when we're in the same studio together, mm-hmm. then, you know, you're just texting a little bit. And sometimes, again, there's going to be the odd time where we both maybe jump in and ask a question at the same time.
Right.
But, you know, that's just the way it is, right? I would hope that people understand it's different times, and that there's a reason that the odd time there's a pause. There's a reason that the odd time we'll be talking over each other. But for the most part, we try to communicate that way and do the best we can. And, you know, I think it's worked, from my perspective, about as well as it can under the circumstances.
Right. Absolutely. It's a different time for everybody. And, you know, you kind of have to adapt and be flexible, I guess. We should move on to the CFL. Of course, on Monday, they announced that there will not be a 2020 season. Shortened or otherwise, there won't be bubble games. There won't be a Grey Cup. I don't think anyone was shocked. There have been moments through the process where it was more optimistic. There were moments where it didn't look good. I wondered what your reaction was today when you first heard, and, you know, did you feel like maybe it was heading in a positive direction before this all happened?
Yeah, I mean, yesterday when the news came down that they weren't getting any government money, you knew. You knew it was over. I mean, you were hoping for a miracle. You're hoping for some sort of divine. Actually, I was hoping for a miracle before, and now I was hoping for divine intervention. And basically, we didn't get divine intervention. So really disappointed. I'm from a selfish perspective, I love the Canadian Football League. I love being able to call Canadian Football League games with Jeff Avery on TSN 1200. It's just a really fun job, whether it's home or away. I wasn't sure if we were going to go to the bubble in that scenario, go to Winnipeg. I wasn't sure if, because Jeff works in the financial industry, and he wouldn't be able to go for, 2 months straight or 2 to 3 months or whatever it is, to Winnipeg. So, would they use the NHL model, everyone broadcasting from studios just in their home markets, or would they be allowed to go to Winnipeg? And if they're allowed to go, what happens with, a lot of the color analysts, right? I mean, would they fly Jeff back and forth? Anyways, those are questions don't really need an answer to at this stage. So it's unfortunate that they couldn't get things done, but selfishly, disappointed that there's not going to be Canadian Football League action this year. Again, partially because of the broadcast and how much I love doing the games, but just I love the league so much.
Yeah.
So I feel for anyone that's a fan, but mostly I feel for players that are, people that are directly impacted by this financially. And that's players, that's staff. I mean, you worry about, how many layoffs are there going to be throughout the league and throughout the 9-member teams, talking about, maybe a financial reset going forward in 2021 and looking at the overall business model and, how it works. So that means when you talk about the structure of your business model, that means you're going to see changes and changes that are going to be hard for a lot of people to take. So, I worry about, my friends in the business that are affected by this, staff members. And again, I just feel for players. I can't imagine, work hard in an off season, just hoping for the opportunity to play and having a contract to play professional football. And then you get to when you're supposed to play and you can't play, earn your living that way. I mean, a lot of these guys have jobs beyond that, second jobs, but still that's a real kick in the gut for so many different people around the league.
Yeah,
so
it's your popcorn guys. It's your security people too,
exactly.
Right? Like there's so many 100%. People tied to this. Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many different people. Again, I've talked about full-time staff and players, but you're right. I mean, just the amount of people when you're talking about TD Place, for example, the amount of people that it takes from security to people selling tickets to people selling 50-50 and all that kind of stuff, right? It's just it takes a real bite out of the community at large. So it's very disappointing. And now, I'm just hopeful that 2021, I mean, we don't know where this thing is going right now. I'm just hoping that in 2021, there's some sort of vaccine or cure that allows butts in seats and full butts in seats, right? I mean, they need, if 2021 is going to be a go, when you talk to people around the league, they're going to need the ability to have full stadiums, have 20,000 people go in to watch a game going forward, a socially distanced, even 50%.
Right.
12,000 people at TD Place isn't going to cut it.
Doesn't make enough money. Yeah.
For some of these community-based teams, right? I mean, the MLSEs and the OSEGs and the Calgary Flames who own the Calgary Stampeders, obviously Dave Braley, Bob Young, they're in a much different situation than the three community teams who are, they can't just dig deep and say, okay, well, we've lost 8, 10, 12 million. Well, where's that money coming from?
Right.
You're a community-based nonprofit organization, so it's tough. And again, just hoping for the best going forward, because to me, this league means too much to too many people, and has so much history with over 100 Grey Cups, and just the cultural impact that it has as a truly Canadian league. And I don't know, I'm just really disappointed in a lot of ways. There's no one person to blame.
No.
I think the CFL needed to do some things differently, and I think, you know, I don't understand why the government, and again, not to get too political,
no,
but from my perspective, $30 million loan interest free when you're giving out the type of, you know, grants,
$200 million to Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah, and just the grants that have been given out to various groups. I think a $30 million loan to me is more than reasonable. And the fact that they didn't give an answer for as long as they did, and like, leads me to believe that the government really didn't want to be the bad guy here. That,
yeah,
really, they probably didn't think that this was going this far.
Right.
And in the end, when the players and the league came to an agreement and were ready, and the health and safety protocols were approved or were about to be approved, it wasn't going to be a stumbling block. Then it was like, oh, now we have to be the bad guy. Really? I really don't want to be the bad guy.
Right. And,
you know, they should have just been the bad guy all along. And then, you know, people wouldn't have been strung along for as long as they have been.
See, I agree with that part, right? Like, I've said on this show before, I think you and I feel a little differently. I am almost always opposed to government money for pro sports. Now, this is a little different. It's a different type of league. It's a different situation. They're not asking for help building stadiums, things like that. But this looks to me a lot like the Blue Jays thing, where if you're going to say no, just say no. Like, they strung it along so long that you completely run out of runway. The Blue Jays were left, was like, 3 days before the opening of the season, before they were by the way, you can't play here. That was a totally reasonable stance to take, but you could have taken that stance weeks ago. And this felt a little similar to me. Like, if you don't want to do this, that's okay, but there was no reason to keep stringing it along. And I think you're right. I think they were hoping that this would fall apart somewhere else, and they wouldn't have to step up to be the bad guy. The thought that I had was, I didn't like the idea of government money going to a bubble season and paying for things that aren't going to keep your popcorn guy and your security guy and whatever employed, because, you know, you're not going to be in all these cities. You're going to be in a bubble. What I wondered if the league shouldn't have done was ask the Canadian government for enough money to stay alive. Here's what it will take for us to not go bankrupt so we can try and start up again in 2021, rather than asking for enough money to play and run a bubble. I've been listening to you on the radio. I know you feel a little differently about it. I'm curious, you know, do you think that the ask, obviously you kind of referenced there that you do, was a reasonable one of the government to try and play this year?
Yeah, because again, like, to me, you're overlooking the issue of the players, right?
Sure.
And they don't, because they don't qualify for CERB, they don't qualify for CERB because they're viewed as seasonal workers. So,
well, and half of them don't live here.
So, like, from that perspective,
yeah,
I think they really needed to kind of change the way they looked at this thing. And again, we're talking about a loan. If we're talking about giving,
sure,
them money,
sure,
then I would say, and look, I'll be honest, I would have been okay if the federal government, they gave $18 or $19 million to the NAC, a grant, if,
right,
they did that in terms of the Canadian Football League, I'd say perfect,
right?
You know, I get that there's a lot of people, then there's no right or wrong,
no,
right, when it comes,
no,
to,
we're
that,
in uncharted waters here,
like there's no right or wrong in terms of somebody's opinion,
right,
about whether the NAC deserves $18 or $19 million, whether the CFL deserves $18 or $19 million or whatever.
Yep.
But when it comes to a loan, like I just find that to be
no, that's true. That's true.
Given the cultural, just given everything, given the cultural importance of the Canadian Football League and the history and the heritage importance of this league. And just given the fact that the players don't qualify for CERB because they're deemed to be seasonal workers,
yeah.
Given all that together, when you're talking about a loan, and yes, an interest-free loan, but a loan, I think they dropped the ball. That, and I get there's going to be people that disagree with that are still hell-bent on saying no money for professional sports. And I get the optics of seeing Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment worth billions of dollars. And,
yeah.
And again, Oseg and Bob Young and Dave Braley and the Flames organization and all that. But again, three of these teams are community-run organizations. Every team in the league.
Well, they seem to be the ones who wanted to play, right? Like MLSE, it came out last week. We're like, no, we don't want to play. You're the newest owner here and you got the most money. What's the problem, right? Like,
so, but my point is,
yeah,
every team in the league spent over $600,000 last year. It's in the financials when you look at Saskatchewan Rough Riders, Edmonton Eskimos, because, when you're talking about community run teams, like the books, you can open the books, right? And
yeah.
So every one of those teams spent over $600,000 to prop up the Montreal Alouettes last year. Okay. So now if you're talking about COVID times and it's one thing for MLSE to dig deep, but now does everyone have to dig deep into their pockets to prop up those three community-based teams as well? Like And that's where I think just in terms of the whole package and the CFL, look, I'm not putting all the blame in one spot. The CFL, their original ask going to the government asking for $150 million and not even a loan, but $150 million.
Yeah. By all accounts, unorganized, right? Like
and the way they did it, they didn't talk about the players at all. They didn't come with any kind of plan.
Right.
Like that, they've admitted that was a mistake. So if they admitted that was a mistake, obviously they screwed it up.
Yep.
So there's blame to go around here. But I just think given all that and given the people, the higher ups in the CFL seem stunned today that they didn't get the money. So if they seem stunned that they didn't get the money, then I think they're led down the garden path
mm-hmm.
here by the government as well. And to me, I think the government needs to wear some, and I think the CFL needs to wear some in terms of why they're not playing football. But when I look at the CEBL, and it's not apples to apples, you're talking about different salary structures, different amount of people, but the CEBL able to play, the Canadian Premier League's able to play, you know, all the different major leagues in North America are able to play. The Canadian Football League is the biggest league, professional league, in North America that will not play a game in 2020.
Right.
And that's disappointing. And when you've got the interest that you've got in the CFL, when you've got the television money that you've got in the CFL, really disappointing. And again, for me, the CFL has to wear some of that for sure. But I think given the circumstances, I think the federal government has to wear a little bit of this as well. And that's, it's there's no Grey Cup this year. There's no Grey Cup. This is an event. I mean, the last time there wasn't a Grey Cup, it was the Spanish flu, right?
Yeah, another pandemic.
Cancels the Grey Cup, but this could have been done. This could have been avoided. And unless you've been to a Grey Cup, you truly don't appreciate how important it is in terms of Canadiana. It truly is a fantastic event, and it's not even about the game. It's about the week,
yeah.
Much like Stampede. It's not about, I've been to Stampede. I'm not a rodeo guy.
Right.
It's not about the actual game. Winter Carnival, Stampede, like these are events that get federal government money. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're important to our culture, and Stampede was canceled this year as well. But I to not have a Grey Cup when it, there could have easily been a solution here. Again, I think the CFL and the federal government will both wear this one because there should have been a different outcome.
Yeah, and I think you're right there. I think this was avoidable for sure. And one of the interesting things that we've talked about on this show before is that the CFL is very interesting in that it has a big brand, but it's a small business, and it's smaller than it looked. TSN does such a nice job of putting it all in HD, and you have professional coverage across the league on these different radio and TV channels. but it's not nearly as big of a business in terms of the money that it looks like on TV. And that can chafe on people when you're asking for money. And I think maybe there's a little bit of that too, right? You heard lots of talk, but we're not giving money to millionaires. Like, no, you're not. Like, not in the CFL, you're not. And so it's interesting. I do wonder if we could be optimistic and assume, and we're a long way from really being able to assume, that we're able to put full stadiums into next season. What do you think happens here? Is the CFL about to be in violation of a pile of contracts? Are there going to be way more free agents and we're kind of reshuffling things? What does the league look like next year to you, assuming we can put people in the stands?
Yeah, it's a great question. In terms of the contracts, the players have been, certainly one of the things that's been brought up here is if there's no season, that these contracts are null and void. Yeah. So is that something that the PA, I'm not sure that's good for anyone. Now, look, I think there should be an option, right? If you signed a 1-year deal, then if you want to go elsewhere, then you should be able to go elsewhere. But I'd like to see some sort of continuity. And I think everyone signed in their respective places for a reason, I think, right? So to see complete chaos and to see every team basically have a full team full of free agents, I don't know. That to me isn't necessarily the best thing for the league, because we've already seen too much of an issue with player retention. I think there has to be some sort of happy medium. So hopefully that's something that could be bargained between the CFL and the Players Association.
The timing's not great for the players either, right? The XFL didn't work. The AAF didn't work.
Yeah, AAF.
So you're running out of options if you're players in terms of how bad do you want to see this crumble up here, right? Like, you might want to hold on to what you got.
Well, the most important thing going forward is the CFL and the players have to work together. Yeah. There's too much, and both have to wear that one. I know a lot of people want to blame just the CFL, but both have to wear that one. There was way too much animosity for my liking a little bit earlier, and maybe that clouded kind of the federal government's vision. Like, they needed to be together as one, and they weren't. It seemed like they were on a different page. There's too many people yelling, and too many players yelling. And I get why they're pissed off.
Yeah,
I totally get it. They felt that they weren't being looked after, but there has to be a more unified front. There had, like, some of the complaints from my end, from the players' standpoint, like it didn't seem like enough of them. Some of them did, but it didn't seem like some of them appreciated how difficult the scenario was.
Yeah.
That a league that already has, a good chunk of its teams losing money, and way too much money. I mean, you want to talk about the Maple Leaf and sports entertainment in terms of, what they're worth. And look, the optics are the same for me as well, right? I mean, do I want to see Maple Leaf sports and entertainment get a check from,
right,
from the federal government?
No one does.
Because they're crying poor?
Right.
No. But I think the reality is they all you have to do is go to an Argos game. All you have to do is walk around Toronto and see how disinterested the general public is there. It's like you've got different islands of support in the league. Saskatchewan is on an island.
Unrivaled,
at the top.
Yeah.
It is number one there. Then I would say there's five cities that are in the next island. People say Winnipeg and Calgary and Edmonton are above Ottawa and Hamilton. I say BS. I'll tell you that right now. I know there's as much passion and as much interest. Maybe in the 80s and 90s when I grew up in Edmonton, absolutely, but it's not the same in Edmonton, Calgary, and Winnipeg as it was before. So I would say Saskatchewan's on an island in terms of interest, then Edmonton, Winnipeg, Calgary, Ottawa, and Hamilton,
right,
on the next island. Then the next island is Montreal and BC, where there's definite concerns about interest in the Canadian Football League, but there's still some interest. It's not completely zero. And Toronto, I'm stunned when I go to Toronto, just at the lack,
yeah,
of, and I'm not stunned anymore, but
no,
there's no presence whatsoever. And that's not very good. So Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, I mean, they are losing a lot of money. Dave Braley losing a lot of money. He spent a lot of money on this league. Montreal, again, just everyone propping them up over the course of the last year. I mean, if everyone's spending 600 grand times eight, that's about $5 million.
Right.
Right. That's what they were losing. You know, that doesn't take long to figure that out.
Yeah.
That basically the Montreal, so they're a money loser as well. You know, those other five teams in the middle, Saskatchewan, you know, prints money, but with merchandise and all that, but even they're a community based team, and it's not like they've got a $12 million fund, to get through the pandemic. So, there are challenging times ahead here. And I thought some players appreciating how difficult it would have been to be in their situation, and you try to put yourself in their shoes and you understand it. But I thought some really needed to understand better what some of these groups are going through, and that's just trying to keep the league viable. And so they need to get on the same page. I think, you know, you can't make this work going forward unless if they're at each other's throats again, and there's threats being made. I mean, right now, if you're the Players Association and if you're making threats, oh well, you know, we're going to do this and that. Well, you can just basically dissolve the league if you're the Canadian Football League, right?
Yeah,
and just start over. I mean, there's all these new stadiums in Saskatchewan and Winnipeg and Ottawa and Hamilton, a refurbished Commonwealth Stadium in Edmonton, a refurbished BC Place. I mean, there's going to be football. People didn't spend this type of money to have, you know, the new Mosaic Stadium in Regina sit empty. So there's going to be football, but it's going to be on their terms. So I think it's important for the players and the league to have a unified front. And if there isn't, then that's only going to hurt the players in the long run, from my perspective, because this is tenuous going forward. Without some type of benefactor or without butts in seats by the spring of next year. And there's too many unknowns when it comes to that. And so, you know, they may have to go something like the XFL model, where, okay, quarterbacks can make 500 grand if you're a starter, and, you know, everyone else is making 75 grand.
Right.
And you know, that if you're somebody making 200 grand in the league right now, or 120 grand,
you may want to keep your mouth shut.
you know, that's a big change going forward. And you know what, maybe the CFL to succeed in, you know, maybe it's going to be CFL 3.0. Maybe they need to go down that route, and we'll see what happens. But I would suspect there's going to be some big changes going forward. But in the meantime, I hope the players and the league can get together and form a unified front to make this work, because you need to have you need to be building bridges right now. You can't be blowing up bridges. And I think it's super important for everybody in terms of the long-term health of the league to just come together and say, okay, how are we going to make this work? Because I could tell you how it's not going to work. It's not going to work with the players in the league being at each other's throats.
Right. No. Last one for you then. How do you think everything that's happening right now, both with the CFL and now the OHL announcement that they're going to try and start in December, I believe it is, December 1st.
Yeah.
How do you think this all relates to Ottawa? And they have they've done a really nice job on the red-black side building a fan base from scratch. I've never shied away from the fact I grew up in the GTA. I was an Argos fan until the red-blacks started, essentially. I used to go down to the Dome, and it stunk. And I was one of those people who said, when they get to BMO, that's going to change everything. It's going to be a much nicer place to see a game, and you're outdoors, and you're closer to the field, and you're down at the lake, all these sorts of things. I thought it was going to be great. And it just never translated. And the Red Blacks started up here, and there was a bit of a wave, and I wanted to be part of this new thing that was starting up, right? Living here, I'm always going to be a Leaf guy. That's never going to change. But I changed my CFL allegiance.
I won't hold that against
you. Yeah. So I wanted to be a part of this new thing they were building, and it really did build nicely, and they had some success earlier than most people expected. And now this kind of interrupts that momentum. And I wonder how this you know, will affect the Red Blacks. I wonder what your expectations are. I know they're a little bit different, obviously, around the OHL and whether they're going to be able to pull this off. What does, in your mind, this pandemic thing mean to OSEG and their viability moving forward?
Yeah, it's tough on the entertainment business, right? And you know, you look at concerts as well.
Yes.
You look at restaurants. I mean, the entire Lansdowne complex, it's entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And so restaurants, okay, well, we're allowed indoors. I mean, I don't know about you. I'm still delivery guy or eating on a patio.
No,
right,
I'm not
now,
going.
Or,
yeah, exactly.
We're eating in my own home. So
yep.
I'm not really feeling that comfortable yet.
I'm still in phase two.
So restaurants, you know, it's a challenge. Restaurants and bars, it's a challenge in terms of concerts. Concerts are going to be the last things.
I think so.
I mean, to go. Although I've seen some quite creative stuff. I know there was a socially distanced concert I saw pictures of in Newcastle, where in England, that you know, they had little kind of seating areas, and then it was outdoors,
mm-hmm.
and then you know, basically socially distanced from the next group. It looked further than 6 feet away, but
well, I think
yeah,
Garth
it was,
Brooks
it was kind of
did a
cool
drive-in
little
concert here not too long ago. I think you're seeing some more of those. It's
no, a cool little idea, and that's what you're going to have to do. But in the end, the entertainment industry is you know, it's in dire straits right now. Let's be honest. I've got a friend that was a rock concert promoter that I met in Barcelona at a Mastodon concert. And
nice.
he's gone on to a different business because of COVID. So like, you can only imagine how many people in that business are trying to make ends meet. So, very, very difficult times, I think, for OSEG, very challenging times, given the fact that, you know, concerts, everything that they put on, right? I mean, from, you know, Christmas market to whatever, it involves people.
Yeah.
And right now you just can't have big gatherings of people. And so it's all contingent. And I'm not convinced that, you know, the NHL or the OHL or any of these leagues are going to be playing December 1st, because, you know, are they going to be able to, right now you can play in a bubble. You
right.
Can play
bubble for
fans.
The playoffs is one thing. Bubble for a whole season is a totally different animal.
That's... Well, and you're not going to start. I don't think these leagues are going to start until they're at least able to have some sort of socially distanced fans, whether it's, you know, hockey, basketball, whatever. So, you know, so when you look at 2021, I think it's, there's just so much that is unknown, right? Mm-hmm. It's, when are we getting a vaccine that's safe? When are we getting a cure? What's the first of those two to happen so that people are allowed to go in large numbers to gatherings again? And until that happens, then you know, we're in a holding pattern. And fortunately, you know, you've got some people running OSEG and that A, have deep pockets, but B, are committed to this community. I think that's why they went into this in the first place. Look, you go into it because you want to help your community out. You go into it as a businessman. I'm sure you want to make some money. And I know OSEG, like in terms of the actual Lansdowne, it hasn't probably gone as well as a lot of people from the football side it has.
Yeah.
But just in terms of the entire project, there have been some financial challenges in that regard. So, you know, definitely some committed people that are committed to this community, and that's a good thing for Ottawa going forward. And you look ahead, and you know, hopefully, when you look at next April, we'll be talking about the fact that you know, it won't just be the Ottawa Senators out in Canada; it'll be five different teams playing next year,
right,
at TD Place, two inside in the 67s and the Ottawa Blackjacks, and three outside with the Red Blacks, Atletico Ottawa, and also with the debut of the Ottawa Aces rugby
right.
league team. So if all of a sudden you've got, once you have five teams playing there, and I think there's going to be a lot of interest in Atletico Ottawa, which is good. The 67s with the group that they've got, with James Boyd and Andre Tourney leading the way, and like, they're going to be good for a long time. They've built a real awesome program there. It's no fluke that they won 50 games last year and weren't even able to finish the 68 game schedule. This is a group that is doing things the right way, so they're going to be good for a long time. I think we've seen just the success of the Red Blacks on and off the field, how people have gravitated to that product. And then you add in rugby league and basketball, and with Dave Smart and that group involved with the Blackjacks, I was really impressed with the caliber of play watching the CEBL summer series. And, you know, if you can get a full season of the Scrub Brothers and Johnny Burhanamaskel and Olivier Hanlon and some others, man, they're going to be a lot of fun to watch. So I think exciting times ahead, but uncertain times ahead, right? So once we get the go ahead and fans are allowed to go to games en masse again and go to concerts, then it's going to be the busiest place around with five different professional teams or four professional teams and a junior hockey team there. And that's going to be great for the city. It's going to be great for OSEG and, you know, two of those teams theirs, but three of those teams, they'd be the landlord for in a landlord tenant type agreement. And it'd be great for just the area as well. And for the businesses that would have suffered, you know, the bars and restaurants and other businesses in that area. So, hey, geez, it'd be nice to be able to fast forward just to that time and say, okay, good. Now we can, you know, I'm a guy who loves to travel, right? I think I've detailed that on your show a couple of times. And, you know, I can't wait till my next travel experience. And you know, we're just in a time where it's a bit of a holding pattern for everybody right now. And so yeah, hopefully we get to some better days sooner rather than later. And hopefully, you know, again, there's a vaccine by 2021, because just for so many different people that are dealing with this, from the frontline workers to anyone that's had a loved one pass away, or anyone that's had COVID and experienced how crappy that was for themselves, and for businesses, for people that lost their jobs, for people that are, you know, making 75% of their salary. I mean, there's just so many different people either directly or indirectly affected by this. And it sucks. It really does. I really hope for better days sooner rather than later. And hopefully, at the very least, in early 2021.
Can't disagree with any of that. AJ referenced a few minutes ago that Grey Cup is bigger than the event itself. It's the week that surrounds it. And about a year into our podcast, we set up, you know, we were going to try and do a week's worth of different shows with different guests. AJ was the first person to say, yeah, I'll come on, when he had no reason to agree to help out a couple of strangers. Lent us some credibility, certainly gave us his time. He's been back several times since then. If you've been enjoying the guests that we've had through the pandemic, it all stems back to AJ during Grey Cup week when it was here in Ottawa. Really appreciate you doing that. Really appreciate you doing this one. And it's been great to hear you back on the radio doing your thing again.
You bet, guys. Well, guys, it's Matt. Hopefully Rob's doing well as well.
Right.
Always my pleasure coming on. And yeah, look forward to, hey, you know what? Look forward to the days when I can pop by the studio and crack a cold one with you guys as well.
Would love to do that again anytime, and hopefully that's sooner than later. That's AJ Jakubek of TSN 1200, the voice of the 67s, the voice of the Red Blacks, and now the voice of Atletico Ottawa. That's been TCA number 717, and we'll see you all on the next one.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
Thanks for listening. You can get more TCA at tallcanaudio.com or by searching Tall Can Audio on your favorite podcast app.